A couple of weeks ago, when we were looking at what about Islam, we had talked about some of the basics of Islam as far as its beginnings, various leaders that followed Muhammad, why there were and still are major rifts and battles fought between the two major groups, the Sunnis and the Shia or Shiites, because they disagree on who was supposed to be the successor. The Sunnis said Muhammad never did appoint a successor, but his youngest and favorite wife, after his first wife died, agreed with Abu Bakr, who was a close confidant of his, that he was supposed to be. But the Shia said no. It was supposed to be Ali ibn Abi Talib, who was Muhammad's cousin and son-in-law, first cousin and son-in-law. And so they were known as the Shi'atu Ali, that is, the party of Ali. And over time, since he didn't get to be the leader until the fourth one, there was a lot of friction, and that still divides Sunni and Shia today. There is another group within Islam called the Sufis. As I said this morning, you know, dancing around with the Sufis. I don't know if you've ever seen the whirling dervish kinds of dances. When I deal with Islam with students, at one point I will show, it's about a 6-minute video of the Sufis and from Istanbul, and they actually do this for hours. And they're like this and like this, and they spin around and spin around and spin around and spin around to music. And they don't try to jump over a broom and fall down. You know, that old game where you put the broom, you spin around and you throw it and try and jump over it. But they'll spin around for hours because they're in a trance connected to God, etc. And unlike the Shia and the Sunni, who do not allow women to have any kind of leadership roles, within the Sufis, women can participate just as much as men. The Sufis are the mystics. Kind of like the monks that cloister themselves away, shut themselves away in monasteries all up in the mountains and all that kind of stuff and didn't have contact with the average people. That's kind of like the Sufis. So, moving along then, there are three factions, but the two major factions within Islam are Sunni, who make up about 85% of Muslims, and the Shia, or Shiites. The Shia swear their loyalty to an imam. The word imam means leader or guide. And an imam who was descended from Ali, and Ali's son, Hussein. Husain. According to the Shia, Ali actually inherited the spiritual and secular power from Muhammad. They claim Muhammad actually passed it along to Ali, though the Sunnis say no. They believe that all the imams possess unique spiritual powers and gifts, and they are, quote, infallible vessels of God's light passed from the prophets to the imams. And they have the ability and responsibility to serve as intercessors between humankind and Allah. The Imam and the Ayatollah are the ultimate final say for Islam and have God-derived and God-related authority. End of quote. And that's from a Muslim writer, a Muslim scholar. So when the Ayatollah Khomeini came back in after, you know, we propped up the Shah of Iran and then he was gone, and the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had been exiled, comes back in, he was seen as having God-derived authority, and since he had not been killed and he came back and had that leadership role, all these Shiites followed him because Iran is predominantly a Shiite nation.
What religion was the Shah?
The Shah of Iran actually was a Muslim, but he was a Sunni. Most ISIS fighters are Shia. Shia. No. Wait a minute, that's one of those little things that you plant. For the Shia, the imams and ayatollahs lead in and through the mosques, and they have supreme control of Muslim states where there are majority Shia populations. They listen to the Ayatollah before they listen to any other leader. They listen to the imams in the mosque before they listen to any other leader. However, Ali and his son Hussein suffered violent deaths, very violent deaths. Said last time at Ali, one of the things that some of the Shia didn't like about Ali is that he went in and after he defeated Sunnis, then he turned around and said, "Okay, if y'all will just pay a fine, we'll forgive you and not kill you and let you go on." And the ones following him said, "No, wait a minute, you need to kill them." They're, you know. So he didn't, and eventually Ali is killed in a mosque, as we said a couple of weeks ago. He's killed in a mosque by a rival Sunni that comes rushing in, screaming his name and Allahu Akbar, God the Great, and stabbed him and killed him in the mosque. So that's basically, the Sunnis took back over again, and so they're, for over 1,300 years, they've been warring among themselves. Now, you know, we hear about all the other people that are killed by ISIS and the Sunnis and the Shia, and typically we think that the Shiites, as we said a couple of weeks ago, typically the Shiites were and have been the more militant Muslims, but then again, Saddam Hussein was a Sunni, not a Shiite. So it just depends on all of those kinds of things. But they actually, in this warfare, more Muslims have been killed than anybody else in this warfare between the two groups. By the way, the Saud family are seen by ISIS and the Shia as heretics. And if they ever get control of Saudi Arabia, the Saud family will be very, very slowly and then very violently tortured and killed, because they have allowed Westerners to come in. You know, we helped Osama bin Laden. We sent him money, we sent him arms, all that kind of stuff, and he was okay with that until we had troops step into the Holy Land for them, which is the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, where Mecca is located. And we put troops on the ground, and not only did we put troops on the ground, we had female troops on the ground. And so so Osama bin Laden then turned on us. She believed that the divine authority to be spiritual and secular leader was first in Allah. Then Allah gave it to Muhammad. Muhammad passed it on to Ali and his legitimate descendants. There's a subgroup within the Shia called the Twelves, and they said that there are 12 imams, and the 12th one they're waiting for. That's the one that will usher in a total Muslim kingdom, and will come in just before the time of judgment, and just before when Jesus comes. This one will be known as Al-Mahdi, the chosen one. When ISIS started trying to conquer all of this land, because you cannot have a caliphate, they wanted to set up a universal caliphate. You cannot have a caliphate without land. To claim to be the first or the primary caliph, the leader, spiritual, military, etc., without having land, a kingdom, is seen as heresy and false. And so that's why people didn't really understand in a lot of instances why ISIS was so bent on controlling certain areas and expanding the land, because that's, you got to have the land for a caliphate to take place. And so they were trying to get more and more people to join it eventually to cover all of the land. All those different places, yes. Because if they can claim the land, then their leader, who says he's the caliph, okay, they say, well, he's got a caliphate. So, and if that land is taken away, and that's part of why the big push with Sunnis and military from the West and all that kind of stuff to retake the land, is if eventually they get them to the point where they don't have any land left that they're occupying, the caliphate dies. The caliphate or the caliph, he is the primary He is a primary spiritual and C-A-L-I-P-H. Yes. Have to have land for a caliphate to exist. Yes. No. A fairly decent size, but then they believe that when Almighty comes, he will help expand it to a worldwide, and they will occupy the entire world. Yes, Islam is one way or another about bringing all the world under the worship of Allah and Muslim rule. Whether that's peaceful or not.
Youssef, who has written this book called The Barbarians Are Here, and he went on to say they've got 20 military camps and training in the United States, so forth and so on. And he said virtually they are going to take over the world. That's their goal. Period.
Well, see, the Ottoman Empire, that they were conquering all the world that they knew at the time.
Well, yeah, and then you hear about all these peaceful people here. This was a good one and everything else. The Clemson student, let's bring her back, so forth and so on. Where do you cut what off at and everything else? And how do you...
That's a hard question, because there are a lot of Sunnis in particular. There are a lot of Sunnis in the West who are looking for peace, and they go with the parts of the Quran that say religion should never be forced or coerced, but you should use reason.
So they are an actual sect that's not trying to take over the
world. Well, but the thing is, some Sunnis have joined with ISIS.
Yeah.
Saddam was a Sunni, and Saddam wanted to conquer large portions of the world.
We still leave our doors open, but all the Muslims come in that won't do. Trump all wrong, in other words?
No.
I think we need to be prudent regardless.
Yeah.
Regardless, we need to be prudent.
I just feel it wasn't the way years ago. It was just mushrooming, and with their goal and the finality that we're virtually on the edge of the holy war when you get to it. We're outnumbered already, and we've lost our majority rule, so to speak, in many aspects by allowing and being freedom and everything else.
We do, but yet our Baptist forebears said that they would fight and die for the right of everyone to worship as they please or not worship at all. So,
don't you think they meant in Western thought, not Eastern thought?
Probably, probably so. They were talking about Western thought. Well, most of them were, however, in William Penn in Pennsylvania, he references, be they Christian, Jew, Mohammedan. He specifically says Mohammedan or otherwise.
No.
Or no God at all.
Right, but they didn't. I don't think they would have fought the same fight for violent Muslims.
I think the key is the violence, regardless of the religious tradition.
Yeah, but even the Christians in the United States
spent many
times
against Mormons,
know
what's
going
to
be
about
too.
The whole Christian movement and missionary journey, you talk about the Christians.
A lot of it was. Robert?
But they're forcing it on us, and we're supposed to take it.
Yeah, that's
why I see.
Yeah.
You know, we're not supposed to force it on them, but they can force it on us.
And see, technically they're not supposed to force it. However, the later surahs, the later revelations, some of which, one of them is Surah 9, chapter 9, that with the sword verses in it, where you're supposed to, lie in wait, and if the heretics won't convert, then kill them. You can do all kinds of things, such as you cut off limbs on alternate sides, so you cut off the right leg and the left arm. Or, you know. No.
No,
not at all. In fact, our big buddies, our big oil buddies, the Saudis, do not allow us to. The hounds are running. Forgot to turn that off again. The Saudis do not. Do not allow us to start churches or Christians or Jews in the military to talk to Muslims in Saudi Arabia about converting or any of that kind of stuff. Excuse me.
Since if I look for that politics, we would all line up, whatever. The 9/11 terrorist attackers, most of them come from Saudi.
Yes. Well, I think that's why I think we have to be very prudent and.
Well, we can't
yes.
go over there and do the same thing.
No.
For a reciprocal attitude, I think you would find American concerned or upset by it.
Well, and, you know, and I agree. I'm the guy who I told you at the meeting that theologue where the imam and two other guys were trying to say, and they, you know, Adam was the first Muslim, and on and on and on you go, and that Jesus was a Muslim. They were talking about taking questions and all, and I finally got to a point when they were talking about, you know, we don't try to force, but if you see this and if you look at this, you should be convinced. And I said, well, let me raise a question. What do you do with Surah 9? And Tom will tell you, his whole demeanor changed at that point, and he got very tight, pursed his lips and very agitated with his voice and all that kind of stuff, because Surah 9 is the one that says, lie in wait for them, and you know, kill them, and there are other places where it says if they don't submit, crucify them, burn them, and behead them. And see, those are later revelations, the year or two before Muhammad died, and so even though they appear, because it's not in any coordinated order, even though longest to shortest, even though they appear early, chapter 9 out of 114, they actually are later, and that's what we mentioned last time, they have abrogation, which means a later revelation can totally nullify and change an earlier revelation. And so you don't follow the earlier revelation, you follow the later revelation. Started off peaceful, but then he's changed and that kind of thing. No, I don't think so. But yeah. Well, yeah, we are. But and you know, and that's the one of the real difficulties is in trying to vet folks, because there are places in the teachings, including the Hadith, which are the teachings of Muhammad. The Hadith and the Sunnah, which go along with the Quran, where it's okay if it's on behalf of advancing the cause of Islam, it's okay to lie.
Oh, yeah.
And sneak in and do all this kind of stuff, because it's on behalf of Allah and Islam. And so that's where you got to be really careful and vet folks. That's a difficult thing. And see, Shiites believed, and Muhammad taught, that in 1100 A.D., that the world was going to end and judgment was going to come. And it didn't, so they've been having a hard time also dealing with all of that since then. And so since the final Imam didn't come, the 12th Imam didn't come in 1100 A.D., to lead all of this and lead the end, they've shifted it to a council of 12 now that lead around the world that make decisions for for the Shia, and they become the supreme leadership for both religion and state, and they use Sharia, not Sherry's law, although it might be pretty tough. They use Sharia, which is an extremely conservative, literal interpretation of Quran, to judge, and all of those kinds of things. Although, what's really interesting is the Shiites alter some of the beliefs. For example, within Islam, Muhammad said you'd pray five times a day. Quran says five times a day. Okay, sunrise, lunch, mid-afternoon, sunset, and bedtime. The Shia alter that, and they allow you to combine the midday and or the lunchtime and the mid-afternoon prayer, and they also allow you to combine the sunset prayer with the bedtime prayer if you want to. So you only pray three times a day. They also, where the Sunnis do not allow for temporary marriage, the Shiites allow for temporary marriage. A temporary marriage is a marriage of convenience and for enjoyment. It's not in the Quran. Well, it's not in the Quran, but it's in the teachings of Muhammad. Because see what they said was Quran, since the world didn't end, Quran doesn't cover every situation, so you go back to the teachings of Muhammad in the Hadith and the actions of Muhammad in the Sunnah. And you know, Muhammad said it was okay. It was okay to have temporary marriages with young women. The difference in a regular marriage and a temporary marriage, I can't remember if I said this last time or not, I don't think so, but the difference in those two is that a regular marriage has no ending time. A temporary marriage must state an end. And a temporary marriage lasts anywhere from 1 hour to a year.
Oh, boy.
No, it's only men. So, you know, you go rent the room by the hour. But, that's what it boils down to. I know, but that's what it boils down to. The Shiites in Muhammad's teaching, and Muhammad did, he married a number of younger women. But in Muhammad's teaching, temporary marriage is allowed for convenience and for enjoyment. Now, there are some temporary marriages, and what's really interesting is this was on the news the other day, and of course they're going to be looking into it. A person can marry someone from another country and bring them in and get paid for it. I think the going rate's $30,000 plus, and they only have to be married. You only have to stay married to them for 3 years in the United States, and then they can disappear. We have a neighbor who has had two. She herself is from Turkey and has had two that have disappeared after 3 years into the country. And nobody has seen hide nor hair of them since that we know of. Right. And that's what they do. Of course. Yeah. And of course, though, but lest we just look at now, I understand that in the Korean conflict and in Vietnam, there were folks from Korea and there were folks from Vietnam that wanted to marry American GIs and come over here. And some of them stayed married and some of them didn't. So, you know, there's a lot. But Muhammad said, yes, temporary marriage for convenience, that would be convenience, or for enjoyment. They can. A Muslim man can marry, though some countries say no, they've done away with it, but a Muslim man legally can marry up to four women at the same time. Be married up to four women at the same time. Now, the United States ruled early last century, the U.S. government, there was a lawsuit ruled that no, that was, it broke the criminal acts against bigamy and polygamy, or laws against bigamy and polygamy, and so therefore they could not. So what happens is sometimes Muslim men will get officially get married a religious marriage, and then, right, and we'll have a civil marriage and then get religious marriages which don't connect with the civil authority. Women can belong to a man legally by either a continuing marriage with no specifications or a temporary marriage with a stipulated time of endurance. The minimum amount of time for that is, like I said, an hour. It is. Whereas the Sunnis teach that you should not commit adultery. The Shia say, no, you can do this, but it's not considered adultery. Because you married. And Muhammad taught that that could happen. Okay. Sunnis, now the other major group and the majority are the Sunnis, comes from the term Sunnah, which means the people. So Sunnis consider themselves the people more than Shia. They consider the Shia as kind of second-class Muslims. The Sunnis consider themselves as, you know, the people. They value the concept of a worldwide community of Islam. And so, yes, they're nice. Yes, they want peace. Yes, they want to not coerce, but use reason and being nice to get you to convert to Islam and try and use logic. But their goal is still a worldwide community of Islam. So both groups, Sunni and Shia, see as part of their mission to convert the entire world to the worship of Allah and the practice of Islam.
What about that mask? Being nice don't work.
If the heretics, both Quran and the teachings of Muhammad say that if they refuse, now if they're people of the book, Jews and Christians, and agree to pay the jizya, which is an annual big tax, and live under Islamic rule and not violate the teachings of Islam, then they're okay. Anybody else, if they don't convert, they can be killed. For any reason or no reason.
I think that's one of the problems we're having right now. We're allowing all this pity-pat stuff, let anybody come in. People aren't realizing the goal of these people to start with, not to mention the economics and everything else. And
yeah, I mean, and
all,
so...
All the negativism, we've got to be people.
See, what's happening, though, is a lot of folks are saying, okay, they're Sunni, and so they're running away from the Shia. But, once again, if the Shia think that they can lie to further the cause of Islam and it's okay to get into the country by saying they're Sunni, then, you know, they'll say that they're Sunni.
I mean, there was a Baptist preacher from Atlanta, acted like he looked like he had some sense. I don't know, and he was like that,
Well, you know, like I said, we have to be really careful. There are four sources of spiritual authority for the Sunnis. The Quran, which is God's word given through Muhammad. The Quran. Second is the Hadith, which means the news. They're the traditions of what Muhammad did or said outside of the Quran. See, Muhammad couldn't read or write.
Surprise.
He couldn't read or write. Man. If it's not covered in Quran or the Hadith, then you use reasoning and the opinions of jurists. These four form the Sharia, which is the will of Allah for a Muslim. Sharia is Islamic law, it's eternal, and it's a set of regulations and principles. It is the path for Muslims. There are four different schools of legal scholars, and I could give you the names of those, but basically they're all very conservative. They cover about half a page here. But the four different legal schools, the jurists over the centuries that they then look to, and they say, well, this school interprets it this way and says do this, and this school comes along this way. Well, that one was the liberal, even though they're really conservative, but this one is the orthodox. And so, you know, they even fight about Sharia law among themselves, what that is to me. There, for the Sunnis, there is no formal clergy structure. The imams only function in the mosque for spiritual and counseling things, but the community as a whole and the community of leaders decide everything outside the mosque. Yes, Susan?
When you teach this in your college courses, have you ever had a Muslim
Oh, yes. I have a couple of Muslim students that have tried to help explain certain finer points as they saw them. I had a Muslim student about 3 years ago who took me to task, or tried to take me to task, when I said that Arabic is the holy language according to traditional and Orthodox Islam, and according to Orthodox Islam, one cannot read it in translation but must read it in Arabic. And he said, oh no, we can read, we have to pray in Arabic, but we can read it in translation. I said, key word is Orthodox. He said, oh no. I said, you go check with an Orthodox imam and come back and tell me. He wouldn't go check with an Orthodox imam. He shut up after that, because Orthodox imam, if you don't read it in Arabic, then you're defiling it. In fact, when it comes to the Bible and the Quran, you know, there are a lot of things in them that are similar. Some of the early stories with Abraham, etc., except they change, instead of Isaac, it's Ishmael and all this kind of stuff. And that actually, Adam actually built the first Kaaba. And Abraham and Ishmael rebuilt the Kaaba for the worship of Allah only. But then later people allowed it to be the worship place of other gods and all this kind of stuff. But they say that, when, you know, the Bible, overall, the Bible has no real relevance to the world because we've allowed it to be translated, and when you translate it, it becomes corrupted.
Quran,
well, they say, an imam would tell me, okay, I'm a Christian reading it in translation, but if I converted to Islam, I could no longer read it in translation. I would have to read it, I'd have to learn Arabic and read it. Because that is the holy language of God, according to Muhammad.
I'm having a hard time discerning between these two groups anyway.
Well,
the end goal is the same.
All Sunnis have to follow with an unwavering support Sharia law and the ultimate Ummah who will come, UMMA, to lead them. But they disagree as to who that will be. It's just like Lutherans disagreeing with Roman Catholics as to who is the leader, or the Eastern Orthodox Church disagreeing with Roman Catholics as to who is the actual leader of the church on behalf of God on earth.
That surreal law that you're talking about, an example that this guy gave was something like, I don't know, a guy beat his wife or something like that. Went to a regular American court or something, and I think for fear of his life, he turned it back to their own surreal court. And the Muslims protested, we have a right to try our own.
Well, and see that. Well, one of the things that's happening in some places where a lot of where large populations of Muslims, whether they're Sunni, Shia, or whatever, they are wanting rather than to try folks or have folks live according to United States laws, they want to try them in Sharia court according to their laws, which one of the goals that they have is to someday have the entire world governed by Sharia.
Yeah.
The whole world governed by Sharia.
And that's why I don't know why we as a nation don't become more educated.
Yes.
And say, well, let's wait a minute.
Study.
No. Well, see, the Quran is, it's, Quran literally means recitation. It's believed by Muslims to be the final revelation of God, of Allah. Now, they are told you can read the Torah of Moses, the Psalms of David, and the Evangel or the Gospel of Jesus. The Quran even says Jesus performed miracles, he raised people from the dead, and he was born of a virgin. But then it goes on to say that he died a normal death like anybody else. He ate food, he was simply a prophet. But you can read these and follow this as long as it doesn't, the portions that do not disagree with Quran. What Islam teaches and what Muhammad taught was that, and actually they're listed in the various scriptures of Islam, there are up to 124,000 different prophets that came, but there are only five great prophets. But the five great prophets came along to correct errors. For example, you allow it to be translated from Hebrew into something else, well, you've committed an error. You allow it to be translated from Greek into something else, you've committed an error. And then as you begin interpreting, you commit more errors. So, you had Abraham and what he taught, etc. And see, they refer, even though Ishmael and Isaac, neither one are mentioned by name in the Quran, when it talks about the son, and the son was going to be sacrificed as well. Ishmael was the son for 14 years before Isaac came along. Therefore, that's who it talks about is Ishmael, not Isaac. Even though the Hebrew scriptures are older in written form, they said the Hebrew scriptures, as later as they were interpreted to say that it was Isaac, that they were corrupted by later people. So Moses had to come along to correct the corruptions by people between Abraham and Moses. And Moses straightened folks out for a while, and then people corrupted it. So David had to come along and correct that. And then after that time, people corrupted. So Jesus had to come along to correct that. And after the time of Jesus, I mean, they absolutely, if there's a special deep place in their concept of hell for anybody, it would be Paul. Because of Paul's Trinitarian and Paul's influence on the church. So Muhammad had to come to straighten out the corruptions by the Jews and the Christians of everything else. And Muhammad claims that he was told he is the last and final prophet. Other prophets, as I said, other prophets received revelations, but Muhammad corrects all of those according to Islam. Muhammad received 114 separate revelations over 23 years. That's what's 114 surahs that are in here, chapters. And some of them are long, some of them are short.
And he couldn't read that book.
He couldn't read it. He recited it.
He
memorized each one of them. And then assistants memorized what he said. And later, after he died, but they would write it down wherever they could. After he died, the Quran was collected from places where they wrote them down. Some of the places they did was on papyrus, on flat stones, on palm leaves, on the shoulder blades of animals, on leather, on wooden boards. So they would go around collecting wherever anybody said this was from Muhammad and Muhammad's teaching, or this was the recitation of the Quran. They would go collect those. Oh, it was animals that were dead, and then they'd carve it or write it on the shoulder blades. Their claim is that the palm leaves that had Quran, the recitations written on them, didn't rot, that God kept them from doing so that they could be preserved for later. Orthodox Islam affirms the uncreated Quran. Allah was and is preexistent to everything known and unknown. His word could no more be created than Allah Himself could be created. End of quote. Even the stitching and the ink is considered sacred and holy by Allah. So, I mean, this is, you don't read translations, you read Arabic, and you must accept. One of the things is, if you are a Muslim, if you're a true Muslim, you must accept that this is the absolute Word of God, a perfect copy of the Quran sitting next to Allah in heaven. And if you don't, you cannot be Muslim. In Arabic. It's in Arabic. You don't find a bunch of notes around the things in the margins and those kinds of things. Arabic was considered the sacred language. The book? But what is here, the copies of it in Arabic are exact copies. Allah protects it from any copyist errors or any of that kind of stuff.
Since Adam was born with the book, it looked like it had been helping him way to do it. I think it just says the book started off with.
That's what you would think.
Yeah. Did any book start?
Sure.
Sure.
And as I said, yeah. As I said, it's the range from longest to shortest. Muslims look to the Quran just as Christians look to Christ. John 1:1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Muslims see the Quran as the same. Not Jesus, not the people who bring it, but the Quran itself as the same. And to defame the Quran, to laugh at the Quran, to interpret the Quran otherwise, is to not just defame the Quran, it is also to defame Allah. Yes. And that's why you make fun of Muhammad, you make fun of anything in the Quran, you've made fun of Allah, therefore you're worthy of death. Kind of. Well, we should. But you listen to the imams there. You don't question. For example, yeah. Yeah. Well, Surah 534. Those that make war against God and His apostle and spread disorder in the land, and that's not just physical war, that's to besmirch this, shall be slain or crucified or have their hands and feet cut off on alternate sides or be banished from the land. They shall be held up to shame in this world and sternly punished in the hereafter, except those that repent before you reduce them. For you must know that God is forgiving and merciful. But for them, that's one and the same. And for them, Yahweh and Allah are the same. Well, it is difficult. And balance that against Surah 2, 256. There shall be no compulsion in religion. True guidance is now distinct from error. He that renounces idol worship and puts his faith in God shall grasp a firm handle that will never break, for God hears all and knows all. So no compulsion in religion. But wait a minute, if they say anything that besmirches Allah or the religion, cut off their hands and arms on alternate and crucify them and those kinds of things. Which was a later surah. So you've got that, and also, let's see, just a couple more, and then I know we're over. It is the Arabic word for God. And Syrian Christians who pray to God use the word Allah, because that's it. They speak Arabic. So it's, which, you know, sometimes adds to confusion. Surah 9:29. Fight against such of those to whom the Scriptures were given as believe in neither God nor the last day, who do not forbid what God and His apostle have forbidden, and who do not embrace the true faith until they pay tribute out of hand or are utterly subdued. That's the sword verse. The Jews say Ezra is the son of God, while the Christians say the Messiah is the son of God. Such are their assertions by which they imitate the infidels of old. God confound them, for they are perverse. You do have God's Spirit does flow on the earth, etc., but it is not the same as what we look at as the Holy Spirit. So you know, there's and to try and you know, it's tough to understand this stuff and to understand where they come from. Well, there's you do have that. You do have that. Say to the desert Arabs who stayed behind, you shall be called upon to fight a mighty nation unless they embrace Islam. If you prove obedient, God will reward you well. If you run away, as you have done before this, He will inflict on you the sternest of chastisement. So, once again, and this is Surah 48, which says you're to go in and you're to conquer and conquer and conquer until the land is totally subdued. Surah, S-U-R-A. They're the chapters, the revelations In addition to that, they follow the Sunnah, which means the path based on Muhammad's conduct, that is, stories told about how Muhammad lived, including the fact that he had this thing for prepubescent young ladies. And the Hadith, which are the teachings and the sayings of Muhammad, that were collected as the small community of Arab fathers then become the greatest nation, the Ottoman Empire. Then they started being collected during the time of the Ottoman Empire. One Islamic scholar, Reza Aslan, writes, these collections were needed as the small community of Arab followers swelled into the largest empire in the world. It forced a growing number of legal and religious challenges that were not explicitly dealt with in the Quran. Therefore, they had to be collected so that people would know what Muhammad taught that came from Allah. There are a number of beliefs and practices that they have, such as the Shahada or the confession, ritual prayer, those kinds of things, but we'll talk about those on another evening. That's hard.
Well, that's what that Yusuf said. That's the only way to combat it.
Well, what's really interesting, right? And what's really interesting is that currently there is a tremendous influx of dreams, and across the world there are a number of Muslims who are converting to Christianity. Dreams are extremely important. Muhammad received the recitations through dreams. His initial commission came through dreams, so dreams are very important. And supposedly there has been an uptick in Muslims having dreams about Jesus and actually converting. Of course, when they do, they run the risk of having their family decide to have them killed. Yes? Oh, Muhammad doesn't come along until the 600s. A.D. Or as we have to say it in class, in religion classes, and write papers, and all the books have switched from B.C. to A.D. B.C. and A.D. today to B.C.E. before the Common Era and C.E. in the Common Era, shared by Jews and Christians. So, but C.E. is the same as A.D. for most Christians, and B.C.E. is the same as B.C. See, I mean, and I know this is a lot of stuff, and it's confusing. But you may, and part of the reason, you know, I mean, I got a bunch more pages. Part of the reason with the question that came up is to try and understand. Okay, where do they get this? Why do they think there's got to be a worldwide Islam, and why do they do some of the things that they do? What's really interesting is the whole idea. To me, is the whole idea of abrogation. If it's a later revelation to Muhammad or by Muhammad that totally contradicts an earlier one, you don't pay attention to the earlier one, such as no compulsion in religion. You say, okay, you're going to join up or you're going to die. Or if you're a Jew or Christian, you're going to join up or you're going to pay the jizya tax and live under our rule. And if you don't do that, you're going to die.
Yeah, but we run into that same as Christian religion. Like I say, certain churches.
That's 5 till 7. Yes, I know choir people need. We do that, and then of course, you know, in Christian history, Torquemada. So, well, thank y'all. God bless you, and y'all go in peace.